Oh man, I love this music. Never get tired of that music. This is the Kurtech Show. My name is Tech, aka my real name is Michael. I'm your host, and welcome to this Kurtech Show. We've got a great show for you guys today. We've got a return guest and a new guest, and I'm joined with my producer Ryan. How's it going, Ryan?
Hey, it's going good.
Awesome. Adam, our usual other host, is here in spirit, and we miss him. I'm sure he'll be back hosting soon. But in the meantime, we've got some awesome guests, and we've had one of them on before. I want my producer to introduce these two, and then we can get into it. But they're joining us from all the way on the other side of the world. So thank you very much. Ryan, go ahead.
All right, that's my cue. So joining us today, we have the Rosenrod and Dan, her collaborator, I guess, with her clothing line, Rosen. And I've also heard Velamin. Am I saying that right?
Yes, quite right. Yeah. Velamin.
Beautiful. And they're joining us, like Mike said, halfway across the world. Right now it's morning for them, night for us.
Well, thank you for having us again.
Yeah, thanks.
We've got these two back, and Rose, we've had a talk with you before when we talked about Comme des Garçons, because I'm a big palm head. I don't know if that's a word, but I'm making it a word. I'm a big palm head, and I know you are as well. And now you have started a label. Or I don't know what you would want to call it, a brand or a label. I don't know how you want to describe it, a project where you are now creating your own clothing. The two of you are creating clothing, collaborating, working together. And we wanted to have you on here. You know, I'm realizing that you're our second entrepreneur. We have, what's his name?
Bobbin?
Yeah, Bobbin. And and now we have a second entrepreneur.
Yeah, we should have Oucho on too. We got to get him and TEF at some point here.
That here, you know what I'm saying? Like character people just going out trying to conquer the world all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk to our guests and about their projects, and I want them to describe it. How would you two describe succinctly what you guys, what this project is?
Okay, so we start off with Rosen. Basically, the simplest way of describing it is the complementary clothes to our favorite designs, ranging anywhere from my personal ones, that is Comme des Garçons, Rick Owens, and then mixing in with Daniel's favorites, that is spanning from
more so tailored menswear. Some Raph,
Prada, Jill Sander.
Yeah, old school Prada. Some of my favorite. So it's very technical, but
we mix it in with the relaxed silhouettes of the Japanese designers as well. So I suppose that would be the most succinct way of putting it.
How did you two start working together on this project?
Oh, there's also internet bringing people together.
Yeah, the forums again.
So I knew Daniel through Soundboard.
Are we allowed to mention that here?
Yeah, no, it's totally legitimate. We know that no one is on like a single forum here.
Yeah.
I would assume. Maybe there are a couple.
So I knew him, but not personally. And on Instagram, I saw that he had made a suit of riot gear.
Yeah. So I just finished my final thesis project for industrial design, but it was geared towards police riot uniforms and the whole thing was to make the process easier, donning and doffing their gear, and then create a better, almost a better emotional
approach when dealing with a highly a situation with a lot of tension.
Right.
And so I saw that, you know, there's a lot of potential in that uniform, and I told him, I sent him a message and I told him, hey, why don't you produce this?
Yeah.
And then I said, he just immediately replied, would you like to produce it with me? And so I told him that we could discuss this, and if you'd like to come to China, where I'm based now, we could potentially create this, and so it snowballed from there.
Yeah.
Did you
so
guys?
That's how.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's how we started off, and then we originally wanted to do the project development, and mm-hmm. it was a bit more technical. And then as I was staying in China, I was just exploring the fabric markets and started designing some more things for a different approach and looking at the more Japanese tailored garments and things like that, and so that branched off into the Rosen.
Yeah, it was just actually we just wanted to make clothes for ourselves for our personal use from all the beautiful fabrics that we found in the fabric market, and then we put it up online, and lo and behold, you know, people were like asking, "Hey, are you guys also making this?" And we were like, mm-hmm. "Well, we could, yes," and mm-hmm. then. It became another project that is separate from Velman, because Velman has a vastly different business model from Rosen. Mm-hmm.
So you guys made a whole clothing brand just specifically because you wanted some cool clothes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was just to fill up the gap in our wardrobe, just finding clothes that we could wear under our cool, you know, under the cool com jackets or Yoji over the products without forking out, I don't know, $500 for a cotton shirt.
Did you, when you guys first started doing this, has it become something that, I know it's very in an early stage for you guys, but is it becoming something that, you know, did you originally come out and say, hey, you know, we're going to do like a collection? I know you guys have released a couple, and or have you guys managed to make something that you, is it coming out the way that you are envisioning it, or is it kind of taking a different life of its own?
Bits and bobs, I think both.
Yeah, we both started off separately with, Gracia had a few products under Rosen already, and then I had Snowman tailored garments, and the way I approached it was to have almost a capsule collection. So I only released, you know, a shirt, an overshirt, and a trouser at one time. And Gracia also had a shirt.
Two shirts and a coat.
Yeah.
And so, then we just, you know, like from the reception, we hear what people want. There are so we take two approaches in the sense that, one, we have our own vision, but two, we also listen to what people want,
mm-hmm.
and then we react to, we respond to the market demands, and then we change our approaches slightly here and there, but essentially, the brand image, the brand vision still remains, remains true to what we love.
Yeah, it's still done in the Rosen brand aesthetic. We're not just putting out, you know, okay, somebody, for example, full break trouser is in high demand, and so we thought about it and we agreed, okay, it is time for
full,
it goes,
break,
yeah, and it fits with everything else that we've been doing. So
it's a very adaptable approach. Our business model allows us to respond very quickly.
Yeah, and so your most recent collection, sort of, it's called Off Duty Space Captain,
yeah.
Right? It looks like you guys watched a lot of Cowboy Bebop for that. Do you guys want to sort of talk about where that idea came about? I don't know if it's from the clothing or the names, or both. Both would be good.
Yeah, how is it different from an on-duty space captain? Let's just put that also out there.
Well, the fabric always comes first. Strange. We work with whatever that's available to us. So first of all, we have to know, okay, which fabrics do we have in stock or available to us? And then we see, okay, which cuts do people want? And which cuts do we love? And what designs can we modify from our previous ones? So from the fabric, it flows into the design process. And then we looked at the entire collection and we think, okay, this actually reminds us of something. And mm-hmm. So the title actually comes last.
Yeah, okay. Before that, we do our editorial photos, and then, the title came.
Yeah, we have the vision and the images comes first before wrapping it all together mm-hmm. under a single tagline.
Gotcha. Is there inspiration for the styles that you came up with for this collection? Or is it just visions in your head? Like, where did it come from?
There is no such. I wholeheartedly believe there's no such thing as authenticity or originality. So whatever visions or designs and inspirations, it comes in the forms of all the things we see on the streets, right. All the clothing that we own. We can walk about on, like, let's say, the streets of Shanghai, and we see like a cleaner with a really cool jacket and a strip of hibiscus. Yellow,
mm-hmm.
and we think, hey, there is something, you know, there's a function to that that we can learn from, and at the same time, there's a design element that we can include in the clothes that we make.
Yeah.
So that's, and then we write that down, and we work with the tailor to make the samples, and we see whether the designs in our head actually work in real life.
Yeah, I think the underlying vision that we have is always function.
And luxurious fabrics.
Yeah, it's just, it has to mend together and mesh well.
That's interesting. There's a lot of clothes out there that I feel like sort of function takes a backseat to form, to appearance.
Right.
I'm sure it's pretty refreshing. I know it is for me to see something that's both functional and, you know, just looks really, really cool. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
And can we, I think we forgot to actually say that a big, big part of our design process is like, can we put this on both men and women?
Mm. Right.
Like the same piece has to work well with men and women. And, you know, as much as I like to put, you know, dresses or skirts, I have to be very aware of what the current situation in our gender discourse is at the moment and what people are still open to or not open to. And we try to push the envelope a little with our super, super wide hakamas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we also have to remain realistic. This is where we listen to the, you know, the market demands and see where can we toe the line with regards to playing with the androgyny.
Mm. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why do you think that is, you know, why is that theme so important for you guys as creators? Why is it important to have something that could fit on a man and a woman? And you know, how do you approach that and even from a practical standpoint, you know, like, do you have to worry about having will it be a challenge for you to make something tailored because then it can't be tailored for a kind of person's frame versus another right. person's frame?
Yeah. I think we should talk a little bit about Gracia's main. Also, her 5-year plan of her fat, like, she wants to open up a factory. So I think, which I'll let her elaborate on, but the whole idea of the genderless comes with less waste. So you're only creating the one product, and we're utilizing the fabric in a more
economical way.
Right.
Also, from an economic point of view, making collection that can be both that can be worn by both men and women saves time and saves us time and resources in putting them out, in shooting them, in communicating about them. There's a lot of practical aspects to it at the same time, because part of our ethos is also like we want the clothes to be as fuss-free as possible. Sure, sometimes our clothes can be a little bit the belt, some of the details that we like, but overall there is a big aspect of practicality that plays into making genderless clothes. You can share it with your friends. You can share with your partner. And then it's just, it makes sense for us.
Yeah, as a smaller
brand, you know, to do this rather than, we want to do both men and women, and then you fork out so much money just to put out a single collection.
Yeah, I think our situation and circumstances force us almost to go through
this model,
right.
Also a different aesthetics approach.
Mm-hmm. But again, and then on your point of the technical bits and tailoring, it is much different. Like we often go back and forth on to, you know, what measurement should the rise be? What, you know, we don't want too much of a drop here, or too much hip, you know, it's, so there's a lot more
considerations that we have to think of. And also a lot of times while Daniel, you know, reminds me that men needs lower dropped crotch, I would be the one who reminds him, okay, this does not look good for women with larger chest, larger hips.
She's worried about the bits and bobs up top, and I'm worried about the bits and bobs down low.
Yeah.
So it works out well.
Works for the best.
Yeah,
right? And that forces us to make clothes that is billowy and loose, and that it fits to a certain form of aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to say, we're going to make an Italian, like a really rigid Italian suiting one day, because it's quite unlikely to make that completely genderless,
right,
and stay loyal to what Italian tailoring stands for.
Mm. Really interesting sort of entrepreneur is saying earlier, Bari MFG, and their sort of aesthetic is also very loose cut and also unisex. And theirs comes from more of a historical background, a lot of vintage clothes. But it's really funny to me that both of you guys sort of cemented on the unisex look, the loose look. And I don't know, do you think that's sort of a trend of the time, or is that just economics, like Gracia was saying earlier?
I don't know if story manufacturing was doing this from the economical point of view, but I would say that we are all converging into this this social situation where it's very much acceptable for both men and women to wear very similar garments.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting very, to for lack of better words, very loose with the rules as to what men can wear, women can wear, and then we also have all this dialogue and discourses about gender fluidity and social equity, social justice issues that you know, talks a lot about gender. And it just, it's all coming in together. I wouldn't say it's trendy. It's more like a flow. We are going with the times. We're going with the zeitgeist that is starting to accept this point of view when it comes to gender norms. Mm-hmm. And hence why more people are, you know, like, there's Red Kurani. I'm sure, like, Damir Doma would, if, you know, Damir Doma would probably...
Yeah, if he would put his mind to doing genderless, it could work on both.
Haider Ackermann is basically doing that, but, you know, he's just not calling it genderless as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the designers that we know of today, they're just playing, you know, with basically very gender fluid clothing at this point, but because of the way their business models work, they separate into menswear and women's wear.
But I also like women's wear a lot more. I think it's you can play with the silhouettes, and there's a lot more going on with the tailoring, that whereas men's is, it usually gets stagnant. So a lot of some of our cuts are inspired by women's pieces and then flipped around to also work for a man, something that wouldn't be too femme for them to consider wearing.
You want to go ahead?
No, go ahead, Rob.
Honestly, like, I think that's a really great take on it. I certainly appreciate the sort of unassigning particular pieces to either gender. Like, I want to wear a skirt in the summer. That seems like it'd be ridiculously comfortable.
I must say,
or a sundress.
That men don't wear. I mean, between both men and women, I think men are the ones who need skirts more than women, because we have nothing between our legs. You guys have something, and then like wearing trousers, it's like, geez, you get stuff stuck in the way. Like, you know, the Scottish. The Scottish men have got it right.
Exactly. They definitely do.
I get uncomfortable looking at skinny jeans. So we're always lengthening the drop on the
rise.
Yeah,
it's either the rise or the
drop. Yeah.
Okay. Well, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about, you know, this leads to the next question about, you know, overall, what in to what you guys have done, because I think when we started, this podcast hasn't been going on too long, but, you know, when we started, I think fashion was a little bit different. I think, you know, sort of a drapier feel was a little bit more hot on the internet, and now we have a shift, I feel. Now there's, everything's about athleisure, everything's about being extremely comfortable.
Technical.
Yeah, technical thing. Branding has gotten, like, way out of hand, and as you guys probably know. So I wanted to see, you know, what's the response that you guys have gotten from this type of thing? Obviously, this isn't kind of, you're not making clothes for the masses, but within the larger context of where fashion is now and is heading, you know, talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, I do feel like, you know, I'm also a fan of technical garments, from, you know, everything from old Prada. Gracia introduced me to old Issey Miyake, Jill, and but I'm also a fan of Nike Lab, Nike ACG. Some acronym.
There we say acronym.
There we go. We said the catchphrase.
So
that was the day. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think if we were doing this line, like, let's say we were doing this line back in 2012 when Goth Ninja was in style, or at the forefront, we probably wouldn't think that much about function. I'm not sure. I can't.
Yeah, it could be. You could be right. Actually, you might be thinking about curved seams.
Yeah,
and overlock stitching, that sort of thing.
Whereas now we're thinking about the pocket placement, when and why it's there. The, everything has to have an answer to why we put it there.
Yeah. Can we ride bikes on this?
Yeah.
Or can we, you know, chase after a plane or a train?
Which we're commonly seen doing. So we try and design, even though they're billowy, drapey, we try and design for function and a fast-paced lifestyle, because I come from Toronto, but it's a big city, but I can drive a car there and take my time. Whereas here we're constantly cycling, hopping in and out of cabs, subways. So we want these clothes to reflect the big city.
Yeah, and I must say, we are now verging. Speaking of, dare we say the word now, tech wear. We actually...
Oh, boy.
We actually tried to... we have a bit of, I don't know, we tried to do a bit of a technical side in terms of functionality.
Yeah.
And comfort. Bearing in mind, we're trying to make all of this in luxurious fabrics for Rosen.
Right.
So it's less about making things out of Gore-Tex and heat taping seams, but more of, do we have enough pockets on this jumpsuit?
Yeah.
Or is the belt actually working for the coat? You know, it may be like, it's less to do looks on the outside, more about how it functions when it's worn.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of the athleisure aspect to it. And also, we are always constantly wearing our clothes. We're constantly trying on samples with our Nikes and Adidas, because you know we want people to be able to run in them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that part as well.
Well, not a full on jog, but. You know, like, be able to catch a plane or something.
Yeah. obviously, we are very much aware of the zeitgeist into tech wear that has branched off from athleisure. Like, what? The internet world started off with Rick Owens, and then it went to HBA, and then Off-White, and now it's like everybody's starting doing jiu-jitsu, or trying to do jiu-jitsu in an acronym. But while they're stuck on their desk doing graphic design work or something.
You touched a sore point there. I think, I don't know if he still does. Mike used to do jiu-jitsu, and I definitely did for about 6 months there. Or so.
Yeah, I know.
Uh-oh. So I'm fired.
Yeah, I definitely do jiu-jitsu. I definitely sit at my desk all the time looking at jiu-jitsu videos while you know, also designing stuff. Well, I'm not a designer, I'm a writer, but yes, definitely
designing text. There you go.
It's okay, we're watching jiu-jitsu right now as we do this podcast.
Someone's just like standing there doing jiu-jitsu in front of you.
Yeah, outside the window.
We had the idea of me doing parkour in a hakama.
Yeah, so it comes full circle. But that, we were thinking, you know, it's not like we're not against tech wear. Project Bellman was based on
that
tech wear. It's a different model that isn't as friendly to a small business like us. So it's a bit slower.
Yeah, it's tougher to, we have tremendous, respect for the brands that try to do tech wear, in trying to research from Stone Island to really, really old school Issey Miyake, which people are not aware of. Like, and a lot of Issey Miyake is rooted in very, very functional fabrics. People usually know them as like please,
right?
Or, you know, very natural fabrics, but a lot of the garments made in the 80s and early 90s, they're actually very, very well made nylons, polyurethanes, and polyester. And so we take a lot of inspirations from there as well. And currently we're also looking into making padded polyester.
Yeah, something a bit more warm.
Yeah.
We're trying to source some technical fabrics, and there might be a rosin tech offshoot.
Yeah. Pushing the practical side of rosin,
right,
while maintaining the silhouettes, or at least as best as we could, while actually, you know, making maybe a water resistant garment with aquabislon zippers or something like that.
Yeah, we also talked about, you know, what if we can, like, a lot of the pieces we design can work in a different fabric, like a Gore-Tex or something water resistant, waterproof. So it would be almost, for example, the Epicurean robe in a Gore-Tex would be super luxe and not over the top tech.
We don't want it to be too fussy, because mm-hmm. we're not aiming to be at the forefront of, you know, technical craftsmanship. We're not aiming to be at the forefront of, you know, basically making tech workers that cost, you know, a lot of money. We just want the clothes to again, getting back to complement, you know, the existing pieces in our wardrobe. So
right.
If someone already has, like, Stone Island, or already has, I don't know, acronym, maybe, you know, this is an addition,
right.
So like an underlayer, or a very soft shell. So we have actually considered the beneficial aspects of the current trend that is tech wear. And we're not dismissing it just because it's trendy. They do have merits, especially in the kind of lifestyle that we lead now, where you're, you know, like, especially, you know, you're taking into account global warming. We can't actually predict the weather these days. One moment may be raining, the next moment it'll be super sunny, and you would want, like, your wools to dry quickly, or you want your silks to not tear very easily as you're moving about. And also you would want maybe a more water-resistant cotton.
And there's no reason why the two of the, you know, sort of artisanal and tech wear can't be friends. Like,
yeah.
You look at Massimo Osti's work and things like that. It was almost experimenting with dip dyeing and different dyeing techniques, which is very inspirational to us with our process. You know, we want to keep experimenting and create something that works well with the garment.
Yeah.
So once again,
while maintaining a very reasonable price range at the same time.
Yeah, it always does seem like what you're saying, it goes back to what the fabric is, and then building something that useful for you guys. I always think about that when I'm buying something. For me, a lot of times I hate getting my clothes dirty and then having to dry clean it. And so I'm always thinking about trying to get clothes that if it gets dirty, it doesn't look dirty. So very, like, you know, that's why I end up wearing polyester black. It's like, oh, I spilled some barbecue on there, but it doesn't look dirty because it's black, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Unless you
have a white cat, you know.
Have you come across this term called wabi-sabi? I'm kidding.
Yeah.
That word has got thrown about so much. Mm. It's lost all meaning.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your, you know, you touched upon it a couple of times, but about your model. I know you guys are small, and you guys have this sort of, I don't want to say artisanal or whatever, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, talk to us about your business model and how that informs what you guys are trying to do. And I know that, Rosen, you have talked about sort of anti-consumerism and being very thoughtful about your resources, et cetera. How does that affect the business model, and how does the business model play out, you know, with what you're trying to do?
Yeah, Yeah, so basically, we first start, like as we've mentioned before, our business model is dependent on the fabric that's already been made. For Rosin, we don't go to fabric factory and tell them to make, you know, yards and yards of a certain fabric. We go to the market and see what's available. And, you know, it's already been made and it's just waiting to be used and utilized. And so we try to, from that perspective and from that approach, we hope to reduce new waste in the sense that we're not making new fabrics, because the process of making fabrics is very, very much heavily. It consumes water heavily.
I think it's second or third most wasteful industry.
Yeah,
like creating garments.
Exactly. So we try not to to actually add into that waste that already exists. And so from that, we always remind people that, hey, there's only this limited amount of fabric that we have, and there's only a certain amount of clothing that we can make out of that fabric. So when the fabric runs out, we can't do the same exact thing anymore. We would change the fabric choice into something that's either similar or something that's completely different. Because I know some people love the same cuts and they want it in different fabrics or different colors. But yeah, as soon as that roll or that one or two rolls run out, that's it. So that's our business model.
Mm-hmm.
Very much reliant on existing stocks. And because we work with independent tailors as well, so we know who, you know, we have a good relationship with them. And so we go to the tailor that we constantly work with, and then anytime someone has sent an order to us, we will send that order directly to the tailor. So there is no, we skip the factory salespeople. We avoid the kind of bureaucracy that comes with dealing with a bunch of salespeople and then a bunch of like factory production managers before it actually eventually comes down to the person who sells the clothes for you.
Right.
And so, how's that? Do you have anything to add on to that?
Well, it allows us to just keep experimenting on a small level, and we get to refine a lot of the details. So we get to do some troubleshooting before the products, you know, come out of a factory mass produced. So
yeah,
it helps us
We respond very quickly. So some people, let's say like maybe two persons say something about a certain product, and then we take that on board and we see how we can correct it or improve it further. Mm-hmm. Or even before we put them out to the market, we look at the samples. That's, let's say one model is done in three fabrics. We have three samples and we look at them, we test them. We do field testing then by wearing them outside, and we run and we go out our days in them, and we see, okay,
you run for planes.
Or how much is it like, does it work well when it gets dirt on it and things like that, and eventually we pick like, okay, this fabric looks better than that fabric. And so there's a very, very quick turnover, there's very, very quick response to all the samples and the collections that we make.
And tying in all the, you know, the field testing and what do we want and what does it look like when it's dirty. We both recently visited an owl cafe.
Nice.
Where,
it was amazing.
Yeah. So, and we both got pooped on.
Yep.
And it just wiped right off. So our newest fabric imported from Japan is super durable, and then we have another cotton
poop wool. Resistant.
Yeah, poop resistant.
Yeah, it almost just heated right off. So. Yeah,
but we also try to be as honest as possible. So we do have this beautiful fabric that does shed a bit, and we tell people, hey, this one is going to shed a little on you. So we are being very honest about it. It's beautiful. It's going to keep you warm. But yeah. This is a small risk that you might want to consider.
Yeah, long haired, yeah. Almost, and some mohair in yeah. there. So
we try. That's the kind of approach that we take. We try to be as honest as possible. Whatever we know of, we would convey that to our customers, mm-hmm. and then they can make the decisions that they think is best for them.
So we've touched on a little bit. Do you guys want to talk a little bit more about Project Velleman specifically? I know I had some questions sort of, when does it come out? When can I get it? And then also just what sort of fabrics are you guys using for it? Is it sourced from, like you said, local markets in China? Is it like Scholler?
Project Velleman has an entirely different business model from Rosin. Technical garments require factories to produce them. They cannot be produced it's not possible to produce them one by one by a tailor, because all that heat tape seams, they require special machinery. All that those fabrics, they require testing by factories. So we started off with Velleman by visiting textile factories. For this end, because we had to take the traditional business model of making clothes by engaging factories, we also have to engage a factory to make the fabric. Mm-hmm. And in China, there are plenty of factories that can make this fantastic, really, really high-functioning, specialized fabrics with all the technicality that you want, like three-layer membrane, four-way stretch, anything and everything you can think of.
BWR coding.
Oh yeah,
all the hot words.
You can think of it, they can do it. Mm-hmm. And so, because we are a small brand, we're not able to engage Gore-Tex and buying them in bulk. So we approach a Shanghainese textile factory to do fabrics with all the specifications that we have, that we think of them.
Right.
It has the same water-resistant qualities. But zippers, we rely on YKK, which
everyone in the world does.
Yeah.
Uniqlo
uses them.
Yeah,
exactly. They're very good with accommodating to small labels. With that said, so getting the fabrics made were not a problem. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
But we find out that engaging factories to do complicated designs that it's not just like a fishtail parka, designs that are completely, from scratch.
There's a lot
extremely
of a lot of curved seams. A lot of the pockets have a lot of darting. Things that get overlooked by the factory, so we're still trying to source.
Yeah. So the reason why it takes a much longer time for Velleman to be produced is because imagine that you have to deal with the salespeople, and then you have to also deal with the factory. So ask the designers, and then the sales team with their designers and pattern makers, and third with the factories and the production managers, the sewers, all three entities have three different brains. And then when you deal with that number of, different mentalities and mindsets, anything and everything that can go wrong will go wrong. And so even if we get all the parts, the equipment, all the fabrics correct, making the exact clothing that we want taking us a much longer time. And so we are actually taking our time now to perfect the suit so that when people wear it, it's going to be
comfortable
and it performs to in the maximum capacity that we can think of without, you know, hampering movements. And because it's a technical garment, so it has to deliver its promises.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be like, oh yeah, we're making a technical fabric with like technical bits, and then when you wear it sucks.
Yeah.
The sleeves are waterproof and the body is not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or worse, you know, it's like a lot of we've noticed that a lot of so-called tech brands, they do clothes that don't fit quite right in the elbows, or they don't fit quite right in the crotch, or they don't fit quite right in the knees. And so what they do, they remove all these problems by making like really big clothes instead, like big giant carpets, or you know, clothes with like a lot of waistbands. And you know, all these are shortcuts that can be done, but then when you're making things that do not rely on those shortcuts, it gets tremendously difficult. And not to mention that we're trying to do that for both men and women into like, you know, we're still making like techwear from an androgynous perspective,
right?
And that makes it even more difficult because the drop crush, not the drop of the crush seam and the rise has to be good on both men and women, and it has to accommodate to the different, you know, like the movements of the knees and the elbows, and then
chest,
you know,
pockets can get in the way.
Yeah, the chest pockets, the chest. Women have, you know, ample chest, and men have like have different needs compared to women. So all of this have to be taken into consideration, and that's why it's we're taking one step at a time with project development while working on Rosen at the same time.
Well, that all sounds fascinating. I think that I would hope that I speak for everyone when I say that I would rather buy something that's perfect, you know, if I have to wait for it, rather than something that's been rushed. Anyways, I think we're just about at time. It's about 50 minutes in. So, Mike, do you want to wrap it up?
But I just wanted to take it. I just want to thank you guys for... I'll just close out. I want to thank you guys for being on here. Thanks, Rosen. Thanks, Dan, for doing this. Check out their projects, Roman, and we see you guys all the time online. I'll follow them on Instagram. I don't know if you guys have any other plugs for your social channels or whatever you guys want to do.
No, we're very happy with if you guys could follow us on Instagram, me at the Rosenrod, and Daniel at DanDanXL for more design adventures.
Yes, and Owl Cafes, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Owl Cafes.
Some sneak previews, little teasers.
Once again, thanks to our guests, and thanks to all of our listeners. You've been listening to Care Tags. If you want to keep it fresh, gotta pay attention to the Care Tags. That's it, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, and bye.